Jnanatimirandasya Jnanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmin Sri Gurave Namah Nama Shrishta Manumapi Satchi Putram Matra Swarupam Rupam Tasya Agrajamurupurim Mathirim Gashtavatim Radha Kundam Giriwaram Maho Radhika Madhavasam Prapto Yashya Pratitta Gripaya Sri Gurum Tamnatasmi Vancha Kalpataru Vyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyayivacha Titanam Pavane Pyuvaishnavibhya Namonama Nikilashruti Mole Ratnamaladiti Nirajita Padapankajanta Aji Muktakula Irupashyamanam Paritashtvam Harinam Shamsrayami Kelodunita Kedaya Abhishadaya Pranmilada Modaya Samyak Chasravivadaya Rasadaya Chitarpitun Madaya Sasvad Bhakti Vinodaya Samadaya Madhurya Maryadaya Sri Chaitanya Nidhe Daya Tavadaya Bhuyada Mandodaya Pandit Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityanda Sahadito Goda Daya Pushpavanta Chitra Sangrutamonadu Nilambo Ditati Sadakshavidaha Kripambitam Bandavam Srimad Bhagavati Kata Saviraha Srimad Bhagavati Kata Madiraya Sanjeevayam Bhatiya Srimad Bhagavatam Sadasvanayana Ashrupayana Ipujayam Goswami Pravaru Gadadhar Vibhur Vuyatmadikadhyati Rasa Ghana Mohana Murtim Vichitra Kili Mahotsavulasitam Radha Charana Viloditam Ruchirasi Kandam Harim Vande Vrindavanishvarita Vaiva Padaravindam Primamritaika Makarandara Sogapurnam Ridyarpitam Madhupatir Smaratapamogram Nirvapayat Paramashitalam Ashrayami Bhaktya Bihinaya Parada Lakshay Shiptaschakamaditarangamadhi Kripa Maitam Sharanam Prapanam Brande Namaste Charanaravindam Brande Namaste Charanaravindam Swastyastu Vishwasya Kalu Prasidatam Yayantu Bhutani Shivanmitodhya Manashta Bhadram Bhajatada Dukshaye Abheshitam Nomatira Piyahaitaki Shri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai Shri Harinam Prabhu Ki Jai Shri Gaur Nityananda Gaur Gadadhar Ju Ki Jai Shri Radha Mal Mohan Radha Govinda Dev Radha Gopinath Ju Ki Jai Gaudiya Vaishnav Guru Parampara Ki Jai Sadhu Sangha Ki Jai Gaur Premanand Hari So, good morning again to all of you. We are in our sixth day in terms of seeing our pillars of radical personalism and the pillars that somehow also sustain what has been known as Tadatmya Sangha, that we are trying to be part of in one way or another. So somehow our pillars that hopefully we can understand are keeping our life together, so to say, keeping our spiritual life meaningful and sustainable and deep and alive. So today is the sixth of these pillars, which is the realm of contemplative prayer, corresponding with the sixth chapter of the third part of the book, Radical Personalism. As usual, a brief recap of what we saw in yesterday's class, which where the topic was, I forgot. Divine ignorance, knowing through darkness, doubt, and paradox. So we were connecting the previous topic on how the guru ideally gives answers, but also creates healthy questions, healthy doubt to nourish faith. And how we as students should learn to love questions and not only want answers, want closure, but fall in love with disclosure. Confirmed. And we mentioned how Bhagavan himself, Bhagavati herself, our divine couple are ever evolving. So in that way, they remain an object of perpetual discovery. No, it's not something that we can figure out one day and game over, so to say. And because of that, if Krishna is ever evolving, as we say yesterday, Krishna consciousness is ever evolving. Because Krishna consciousness basically means to be conscious of he who is ever evolving. So, and if Krishna consciousness or bhakti is ever evolving, we should never take for granted Krishna consciousness. We should never take for granted anything related we should never take for granted anything that is ever evolving. Mm-hmm. And in one sense, it has not been the main theme of this retreat, but everything is ever evolving. Love, God, us, even the material energy, things constant movement and unfolding. So everything is ever evolving. Everything is, nothing can be taken for granted, therefore, literally. So that's for another retreat probably next year. The ever evolvingness of everything. Also, of course, we explore how in our tradition, having so much detailed, specific information about every aspect of God's life can give us this toxic sense of certainty. We already know everything. So we don't need to coexist with uncertainty because we have so much knowledge and we can be certain about everything. We even know the names of Radha's earrings and ankle bells and her Devina she plays. It has a name and we know it, right? So what about this whole thing of uncertainty? But again, when we look at Sri Radha and the gopis and the quest behind Krishna's flute and the run into the night every single night, embracing uncertainty, embracing the dark mystery that Krishna is, there are a lot about uncertainty, you know? And love moves in a crooked way, in an unpredictable way. So we have to be ready to be surprised, basically. If not, we lose all surprise, we lose all wonder, or awe and wonder. Life starts to become meaningless. So the journey of faith is the journey of mystery, and faith, as we say yesterday, also the opposite of faith is certainty. Real faith has to do with being patient with mystery, coexisting with that which we do not know, and being always yearning for further disclosure, so to say, right? Knowing that Krishna already became something more and being ready for the new version, the new upgraded version of today, of this particular moment. We're quoting this Christian theologian, Meister Eckhart. He will say, God, rid me of God. And we did this exercise of certainty versus uncertainty, remember? Mm-hmm. Sorry if I traumatized some of you by sending you to that exercise. Yeah, why not? And then we concluded yesterday's meeting with these three verses on how we are, how God, Krishna himself says, you are a mystery, the soul is ascharya, is wonderful in its potential. We are a mystery unto ourselves forever, so better we learn, we are okay with coexisting with that. God is a mystery for us forever, Brahma's prayer, remember, after the Brahma Vimohan Lila, he says, as far as I can tell, I don't want to speak too much about it. You are beyond all my capacities, and I try to be certain about you, and here's the result. Forehead spinning like crazy. And then we concluded when this verse from the Bhagavatam and speaking a little bit about Mahaprabhu, about how God remains a mystery unto himself. So in one sense, everything remains, there is a place for mystery perpetually for everyone. And we did yesterday, later, the exercise of walking with eyes closed, trying to represent the faith journey and being guided and being accompanied. You are sharing your insights with each other, trying to embody a little bit more the theoretical sharing in a more grounded, embodied platform. So we are talking about prayer today. So it's a very, I imagine you already feel the connection between all the things that we talked yesterday, how all that kind of like overflows into the realm of prayer. Prayer is a lot to do with unknowing, embracing mystery, being open to who knows what. nothing of that in a bad sense, but just that's what prayer is about, you know, presenting ourselves in front of God. And in one sense, prayer also is including all the previous aspects we have talking about: vulnerability, individuation, non-duality, interconnectedness, and so on and so forth. Share with me some ideas from your side. How do you think prayer can be tied with vulnerability? I'm brainstorming. So nobody falls asleep also. Why prayer has to do with vulnerability? What's the connection?
To the basis of all relationships.
I won't say anything, just throw ideas.
When you're feeling vulnerable, it leads you to that space of calling out.
Mm-hmm.
We're naked to ourselves.
Open up to up your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Going, it means going, going into that dark place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We can be fully accepted if we fully present ourselves in a disclosed way.
What about individuation? What has to do prayer with individuation?
Here I am presenting myself before you as me. Mm-hmm. As anyone else, as me.
Mm-hmm.
As me to you.
Mm-hmm.
Our personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The deepest honesty, very much access.
Mm-hmm. What about non-duality and all that we talked about?
Yes.
That was
the wrong answer.
Home.
The answer, yes.
The open-heartedness. The open-heartedness within prayer of mind that I'm non-different to what is going on and everything is connected to me. And here I am within that to you.
Yes.
That we're already connected. To him, to everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Hmm? What about guru disciple relationship and all that is entailed? That how you connect that with prayer? Be creative.
I think it's open ended.
Sorry?
Just change your guru. I was going to say, change your guru within.
Including
the mercy that flows from the.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It allows that wonder to be open. Oh, well, I can't express it. Carry on.
Thank you.
The relationship with the guru helps us to draw out how we ourselves can become prayer.
Okay. And what about yesterday's topic? Already, mm-hmm. I say something, but you say something else.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Being in the moment, being aware of subtle things.
Mm-hmm.
When you're facing doubts, then that brings you to that place of desperation. So then you can pray more from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need it, because you haven't got a clue what's going on.
That sounds like comes with some realization, doesn't it? Especially the part you don't have a clue what's going on. Welcome to the club. We don't have a clue what's going on. That's the unofficial name of the Sangha.
I think prayer is nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
And really nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
Enthusiasm for what is to come, because we don't know what it's like. There might be some magic,
some excitement.
Yeah, excitement to receive that magic.
Okay, thanks for sharing. Also, some little sharings for us to see how one topic, as I said the other day, is kind of cumulative. So, whatever we talk day one is included on day two, and on day three, day one and day two are included. And this way, we are trying to integrate all this and find some coherence in what we are talking about. Because, of course, I don't want that we are talking on 7 days, on seven different topics, and each one feels like, oh, today here, now go there. And it's like, what's the connection between all these? And so hopefully we can not only seeing, but feeling that, okay, it's all one thing, and it's just different nuances of the same thing, and we're integrating the different layers. So let's say then, since we are ready to talk a little bit about prayer, and the chapter has been called specifically contemplative prayer, trying to further qualify the notion of prayer. Like sometimes we may say, again, like bona fide guru, and it's like, well, a real guru is bona fide, no? But we have to clarify for a few reasons and the other similar expressions. So when we say prayer, sometimes in the name of prayer happen a few things which can be qualified as some type of prayer, but also we are trying to point to a certain type of present, how to present to the absolute in a certain particular way. So as I did also in the book, we can start for a few minutes speaking about what prayer is not. Sometimes it helps more to us to speak what something is not than what something is. By speaking what something is not, many times it becomes clear, okay, then it is this. And in the description of what is not, we are dismantling probably many of the ideas that we have about what that thing is. I always quote Eric Fromm. He wrote this book, The Art of Loving. Very nice book. And in his book, basically, he speaks about what's love. But first, he speaks about what's love not, what's not love. If you survive that first chapter, you can read the rest of the book. Because why? Because in that chapter, you realize that mostly all the ideas you had about love are not love. So that can be shattering, but that's the purpose of the description in that order. No, first, let's deconstruct, let's unlearn, as we were talking yesterday, let's unknow before we dare to know, especially if we talk about love. For those who are writing the author and the book, I'm feeling that Eric Fromm, MM, psychologist, that book was written almost 100 years, well, a little less than 100 years ago, but yeah. The Art of Loving. Short book, short, powerful, beautiful. So what contemplative prayer is not? Still, it may be a form of prayer, but we're trying to speak contemplative, like a more deep, mystical prayer, including all the things we talked so far. That's the type of prayer we are talking about, one that includes vulnerability, individuation, and all the things you have been mentioning now. And let's be honest, for many people and probably for many of us, sometimes prayer and is considered as a form of, as I say, God domestication. No? like I go and ask things for God, from God, and I offer my whatever, my flower, my incense, my donation. But I conceive the divine just in terms of being my servant, my provider. And again, I'm not saying that there's no place for that. Krishna the Gita is saying, people approach me for wealth, for knowledge, for everything. And they're welcome. So again, as we were saying these days, in certain stages of Bhakti, there is place for kindergarten expressions, and the ducklings will imitate mom duck and all that stuff. So let's be careful not to totally reject, stigmatize, dismiss those stages. But here we are trying to talk a little bit beyond that. So what prayer, contemplative prayer is not, when I want God to do my bidding instead of me doing his, so to say. No, when I just, I approach God from a self-centered perspective. No? Like reality revolves around me, including God. God revolves around me. Of course, you don't say that directly, but sometimes we operate from that orientation, from that narrative. Or sometimes we pray to God with a very toxic certainty that we are already doing God's bidding, because I'm already a devotee, because I'm already chanting my 16 rounds, because I'm following my 4 regs, because I'm completing my daily quota. So I address God, but with the security that I'm doing my part. Mm. Nobody can tell me anything. I'm doing my part, please. So again, that's not very vulnerable approach to the, that's not very dynamic, ever evolving. sometimes we approach God to solve problems, okay, Krishna says, but again, let's not limit prayer to problem solving, because sometimes that's the case. No? When I have a problem, I pray. When there is no problem, I forget about praying, because look how nice everything is. So praying becomes like I resort to prayer for problem solving. But even if you like to think in that term, the point is that we are the problem to be solved. Because many times for us, the problem is perceived outside of us. And there we go to God, please, Krishna, solve that problem. Instead of saying, Krishna, solve this problem. The problems, as I mentioned in the book, problems are not to be solved, external problems, but the so-called external problems come to solve us. No? We should be solved by problems because we are the problem. I mean, not to enter into self-loathing, understand my point, please. No? Put all that I'm saying in the context of a wider discussion. Right, I'm not saying you are a problem intrinsically, you are failed, came by factory failed. I'm not saying that, no? But we have to solve a few issues. So, my point is that instead of we very easily can just project our own unresolved stuff and see problem, instead of missing our own work. That's my point. So, some of those ideas is what prayer, contemplative prayer, is not. No, we are trying. Although we acknowledge those possibilities in different levels, and we may still visit them at times, it's okay. No need to stigmatize anything. No need to also reduce prayer to that and lose sight of the most full-blown expression of it, as we will call contemplative prayer. When we, again, how to define prayer in this sense? Once I remember someone defined it as simply as the state of presenting yourself before God. You are presenting yourself. You are making an act of presence. I mean, he's, as we say always, he's omnipresent, so he doesn't need to make an act of presence, because there is not a moment he's not present. Or he's making an act of presence at every moment, but we need to be present to his presence. Yogamaya was mentioning before, presence. No? This is an important word now, at least for me, presence. Because so many things can be happening, but how present we are, or to what we are attentive. You know, I always remember this famous exercise. I will make the spoiler because I have to give the example, sorry. But you can look it in YouTube of the they were like, well, you know, the exercises, there were two groups, let's say a four and four with different shirts, like one with the red shirts and the other with the yellow shirts. So they say, okay, one of you in each group has to be like bouncing a ball. Huh? And the rest of the group, you have to be counting how many times is the bouncing. That's the exercise. It's like, okay. So each one in their own group has one bouncing. The other ones are like counting. It lasts for whatever, less than a minute. So they do it. So at the end of the exercise, everyone is like, okay, we did it. And they ask them, okay, so how many times the ball bounced? And they were, whatever, 15, 25. Yeah. Now, like, we did. And then comes the real question, right? Like, and did you see the gorilla? And they're like, what? Yeah, did you see the gorilla? I said, no. Which gorilla? Which gorilla? we were just bouncing a basketball. There's no gorilla here. And they replayed the video that they were recording while they were bouncing. And meanwhile, they were bouncing. One guy dressed as a gorilla appears in between them and is moving like this and passes. But nobody saw him. Why? Because they were attentive in one particular direction to the point that everything else did not exist. Even though it was here. So this was a psychological exercise, but to show how much we can be present to something, to a point that we are become absent to everything else. So all this in connection to prayer, remember, how present we are. So the prayer can be the act of presenting ourselves in front of God, in front of Krishna. And presenting means, again, being present, remaining present. And presence with, again, vulnerability, nakedness, honesty, all the things we have been talking so far. Because if we don't do that, we cannot pray. As simple as that. We have to pray with our real ego. Our real ego as identity. Our real self has to be brought to the table. If we do not present ourselves as honestly as we can, there is no possibility of real prayer. False ego cannot pray. Let's put it that way. In real prayer, there cannot be false ego. Because that implies putting certain masks and becoming absent to who we are in God and to who he is, she is, they are, to us in that present moment. No? Follow my point?
Yes.
So, in one sense, prayer has to do with honest presence, so to say, authentic presentation. No, it's not so much about prayer, reciting prayers. I mean, you can recite prayers. Or you can be in silence, you can be chanting Maha Mantra, you can be cooking. But if your inner situation is an honest presentation of your naked self to the divine, that's prayer. I don't care if you are cleaning the bathroom, taking a shower, peeling potatoes, doing kirtan, offering dandavat, anything. I mean, what's going on externally, I don't care. It's secondary. Prayer is not to be defined with, by something external, but the internal presentation of your heart to God, which basically is, I remember there's a nice book called also The Art of Prayer by one Christian mystic. What was his name? I don't know how to say it in English. Theophan the Recluse, something like that. The Art of Prayer. And he was saying prayer is when we are ourselves the most. Basically, no. In real prayer is when you are, because that's what it means to pray. No? It has to be the moment of greatest authenticity of all that, who you are, all the things that we have been talking this day, vulnerability, honesty, all that you can be, trying to contact your deepest self and presenting, offering that to the divine. So in one sense, prayer is not different from who you are. And who you are becomes non-different from prayer, ultimately. Well, I'd like to make this play of words, which I can only do in English, so I will do it. If I will be in South America, I cannot make this. So I have to take advantage of the local language. If you write, someone who writes becomes a... Ramsa, someone who prays. There you have it. That's how the word works, at least in English. Yeah. That's one of the things I love. I hate many things about English, but I like that one. Not hate, this was a loaded word. I have my reservations about a few things about the English language. All this stuff that every letter pronounces uniquely in every word. There's no wrong. All that stuff. My own trauma in learning English. Yeah.
Me too.
So someone who prays becomes a prayer. It's interesting. No? You cannot not become prayer while praying. That's the idea. No? Because again, prayer means my presentation of my most honest, genuine self. In other words, we could say our life and our practice. Now, if you think of prayer as a practice, and you think of you as your life, but your life has to become your practice. In the beginning, we still think dualistically. We think, I have my sadhana, my daily sadhana, and then I have the rest of my day. I have my life and I have my practice. I have my spiritual life and I have my material life. We're still thinking dualistically. We still create the divide, and it's fine. It's part of the journey. Remember that phrase, it's part of the journey. But at one point, my life and my practice are one. No, I don't, are not different. My life is my practice. My practice is my life. No, there's no need to see them separate anymore. So in that sense, I become prayer. My prayer becomes my life. My prayer life, I start to have a prayer life. Not so much a prayer practice. It begins maybe with a prayer practice. Okay, I have set these moments per day. I will just pray. But ideally, that starts to overflow. And, oh, now I find myself praying in the bathroom. That's very interesting. I'm praying while cooking. I'm praying while going for a walk. Not only when I'm kneeling down or sitting in my room, it starts to spill over, you say? Like, that, which is the idea, of course. Right? And at one point, you say, someone who prays becomes a prayer. No, that's where it takes. Recently, I was reading a nice book that was, maybe you saw this podcast I have with Carmen Acevedo Butcher, the one who translates The Cloud of Unknowing. Mm-hmm. Also, she translated another book very interesting called, I'm recommending many books today, as you can see. This book is called The Practice of Presence. No? So The Practice of the Presence or The Practice of Presence, which is by one Christian old monk. And it's about, he has this practice, which is as simple as that is, and basically implies like praying all day. By praying all day means that at every moment he's creating these micro prayer moments. No, you are just walking, and for a moment, it may take 5 seconds, but you like love God. Right? It doesn't need to, again, you don't need to have a particular setting and situation. It's just for a moment you're walking up the stairs and you remember, oh, Radha and Krishna. And you continue walking. Or while walking, of course. You don't need to stop even walking. But he had that and he will say how gradually, by incorporating those micro spaces of prayer in every single moment, of course, naturally it starts to become a continuum. A continuum, and there's just like, there's not a moment when that's not happening. And there are a series of letters about him sharing the results of his own practice throughout his life, and how he's very interesting. So again, it's very, put a cushion on that side just in case you were, yeah. So that's why, like, by the Bible will say things like pray without ceasing, no? Which is, again, if you just think of prayer as I go to the church or I chant my japa or whatever, but I have to do so many things the rest of the day. Like, how can I pray without stop? No? Again, it speaks about how ideally prayer has to become a state of consciousness, an inner lifestyle. It's very interesting. We should not limit prayer to a practice, to a moment. We should understand that whatever we do can be done prayerfully. You can sing prayerfully. You can speak prayerfully. You can relate prayerfully. Anything, especially the most ordinary things of your day, you have to think, how can prayer can enter here? Thomas Merton will say that. He'll say, your salvation begins in the most ordinary moments of your daily life. It begins there, or it begins nowhere at all. In the most ordinary moments of your daily life, that's where your salvation begins. That's because even in that ordinary moment, Krishna's grace is reaching, is available. So if you open yourself there, your salvation has begun. To realize unconditional love is reaching even in that moment, even in that point. In our tradition, we have the same. Kirtaniya Sada Hari, Mahaprabhu said, do kirtan sada. Sada means always. So again, always. I cannot be playing mridanga 24/7. I have to do some other things. But I can enter into kirtan as an internal, a state of consciousness, state of praising, state of glorifying, state of prayer. Even when I'm not doing kirtan. Because sometimes we are very reductionistic. You know, kirtan becomes just the musical part. And a kirtaniya is someone who sings nicely. No? Mm. Even if you have no deep inner life, but you learn to sing nicely, he's a very good kirtaniya. With all respect, I mean, I have nothing against singing nicely, but it can have been devoid of heart. And if it's full of heart and you don't match any single note, you're a great kirtaniya. So that's the real kirtan. And maybe you are not even singing, but you are doing kirtan in the sense of your presence, you know, your inner presence. So, yeah, in Sanskrit, the word for prayer is vandana, one of them. Vandanam, you may have heard. Sravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, pada, sevanam. Bandhan, archanam, bandhanam. Bandhanam means prayers. Can be to offer prayers, to recite prayers of other acharyas, to compose our own prayers. You can give yourself permission for that, just in case. or to pray, just to, again, you can be in silence and present yourself honestly to God, and that's prayer. Many times silence is important also. Sometimes, as many times we have misunderstood non-duality and think, oh, that's impersonal, silence may fall into a similar category. Like, what's all that stuff of silent meditation? Mm. We sing kirtan. Yeah. Well.
How's it spelled, Maharaj? Vandana?
With B, how do you say? Yeah. I will pronounce but B. And the rest is like, it sounds bandana. A-N-D-A-N-A-M, Vandanam. So you can do Vandanam in silence. We have nothing but silence. For example, something regarding silence. Silence doesn't mean don't speak. But rather hear attentively. So silence is not so much about not talking, but paying attention, listening. In Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, verse 38, Krishna says that among all secret things, he is silence. So silence is God. How can we have something against silence? Mm-hmm. You have something against silence, you have something, is Krishna may take it personally. Because he is silence. And he's not only saying I'm silent, among secret things, I'm silence. Something secret is, in other words, in silence, secrets are revealed. If you are in silence and you're listening, paying close attention, something that otherwise could not be heard will come to you. Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse. This is Bhagavad Gita 10:38. Srila Prabhupada's commentary. It says, among the confidential activities of hearing, thinking, and meditating, silence is most important, because by silence, one can make progress very quickly. Okay? Just for those who like to consider silence as something opposite or sampradaya. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in fact, 7.15.77, it is declared that Krishna is he who is worshipped by silence. Just to share a few quotes from scripture for you to know that here we are not making up anything out of nothing. So that's another way of talking about prayer. Silence. Again, silence doesn't mean nothing is going on. Silence doesn't mean there's not absolute silence. I just enter into silence to listen certain things. I probably will only listen here in silence. So bandhana can refer to that also. That's my point. Prayer is not one thing. Prayer is not just Hare Krishna, or repeating the prayers of the acharyas, or composing my own prayers. All that, yes. Doing sankirtan, yes. But you can also be in silence.
So it could be like a prayer in nature too, if you go for a walk.
Yeah, yeah. Again, it's in one sense, it's unlimited, this picture. Because as we say, prayer ultimately is a state of being. So it can be peeling potatoes. It's not that peeling potatoes in itself is praying, prayer, but you can do it from that place and it becomes prayer. In potential, that's the potential. I know that in the beginning, okay, we have to begin somewhere, but it's good to have the broad idea of this. As we say yesterday, let's try to define things in the broadest possible way. So we don't begin with them. Okay, we may begin, okay, prayer is my practice, but I know that in potential it can become everything. Everything can be prayer. Mm-hmm. It's a willingness, again, to try to present ourselves to the divine, and of course a willingness, again, silence means listening, and listening means doing something with that listening. Because if I'm listening to Radha and Krishna's reply or to my presence, something would, of what will come from them will invite me to transform, will invite me to change. So that's part of prayer, a willingness to transform and to change, because they are always transforming and changing, remember. So prayer is not so much about changing God's mind, but sometimes we try to do that, to manipulate Krishna. But it's more about changing our mind about God. Remember when I say mantra, no? We are all about mantra, 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 mantra. What does it mean, mantra? We translate as liberation of the mind. But liberate your mind means also change your mind. Many times what liberates our mind is that we change our angle of view, that we change our perspective. That's mind freedom, so to say. So mantra is change your mind, and it's very connected to what prayer is. Change your mind about the divine. Instead of trying to change his mind. No? I don't know. Just to give a raw example, for example, don't project your unresolved daddy issues to God when praying. No, that can happen. Just one example. No? If someone has those unresolved issues, you can just project everything, and prayer becomes just a way to appease your daddy, your angry daddy. No, I've heard, I've seen that many times. One example of many. No? In fact, yeah, one of the things that most get in the way of our prayer is our ideas about who we are praying. You know? How much we go to prayer with a fixed set of assumptions, as we were already talking these days, about God. Yesterday we were talking about that. In fact, as we mentioned in the book, one of the biggest defense mechanisms against transformation is thinking. With not thinking in the sense of having a deep introspection and reflection, but just the ideas that are always like do in our mind about everything. Yeah. And when we go to prayer, all that stuff starts to come, and it sets the whole paradigm of what's going on, and we need to put that aside in prayer. Because thinking can be the biggest escape mechanism. No? We will try an exercise in a few minutes about that. and how much we are addicted to thinking, basically. Try not to think. Try not to have a parade of ideas bombarding your mind at every second. That's interesting experience to try to do that and see what comes. And just try to be present. Without projections, without labeling, without judging, without thinking, without letting your head get in the way of the immediacy of contacting God in prayer. And again, and not having certain assumptions about who Krishna is. Because generally we go for prayer, and again, it's not so much, we are many times not willing to change our mind about Krishna. We already know, oh, Krishna is this, Radha is this, and I'm addressing. And many times for us, God is a theological concept rather than a person we can relate to. That's some of the things that many times get in the way of our prayer. Still, God is a concept. It's not a person. We don't relate to God as a person, which means impersonalism. It's part of the journey. I'm not smashing anyone, nothing personal here. I'm part of the group. No? Teresa de Avila will say that in Teresa of Avila in English, will say that the one of the greatest obstacles in prayer is that we pray as if God does not exist. As ridiculous as that sounds, no? Because okay, prayer is, okay, I'm addressing the divine. But you are doing that without treating the divine as a person. So no wonder it's not working. Like, I will talk to Amanda Vikram as if he does not exist. It's like, that's quite contradictory. It won't go well. But with that, we do that in prayer many times. In one, technically speaking, that's madness. I'm praying as if God does not exist. Anyhow, Krishna is very merciful and still loves us. Charlie. Something to add to the conversation? Okay. That's why, just to conclude before going to our exercise, first one, that's why Richard Rohr will say, praying is a training in dying. No? It's an interesting way of putting it. No? It's a training in dying. That's prayer. Don't see it as scary. Now, again, it's not a bad word. It's a dying to many things. One of them is dying to our ideas about God. Because if I want to really pray, to be open, to be present, and to allow Krishna to be all that he can be, for me in that moment, I have to die to my previous preconception of God. As we say these days, the last experience of God is generally the greatest obstacle to the next experience of God. So if I come to my next prayer moment, carrying my previous experience of God and expecting him to be still that gets in the way. So I need to die to that. In that sense, prayer is a training of dying to my false self, of so many types of death. When we die properly in prayer, physical death is no longer a concern because we have died so much in the real sense of the term. And that's a real death we have to go through, the die to live. As Srila Siddhar Maharaj will quote Hegel. Physical death is nothing in one sense. It's just changing a t-shirt, technically speaking. No. But death to the false assumptions and bias, and that's what Arjuna tells to Krishna in the Gita when Krishna's inviting him to die to the false sense of self. Arjuna says, I prefer to be killed in battle right here, right now, physically. I prefer to die physically. Because he says the type of death you are inviting me to, the inner death, that's way more complicated. But anyhow, that's part of the death of prayer, trying to unknow God at every step. No? Unknow ourselves and rediscover all that we can be. That says, let's go to exercise one. Before I lose half of my team here. So the exercise we will do now is about what we are talking now, unknowing God. Let's go into experiential unknowing. Are you scared? No, it's okay. No problem. We are safe space. It's fine. Charlie's even getting closer to me. Safe space. Safe space. We are losing him now. So I'd like you to have a little taste of something in connection to what I've been talking about, but putting that into practice. And in some circles, this is also called centering prayer. Maybe you have heard about this, centering prayer. I've talked about that a few times. I quoted in my book, which basically means what we have been describing, no? It's some practitioners do this 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. Some people do it longer, which is sitting in silence and trying to just be present, not to think about God, trying to present ourselves to the divine without assumptions, without all our list of, okay, peacock feather, flute, bluish, nothing. Not that we are denying that, just that we're opening to a further disclosure of that and whatever needs to be disclosed. I'm trying to be present. And of course, probably you will see that you start thinking. And it's trying, and whenever that happens, not chastising yourself, not being frustrated and angry, but in a self-compassionate, friendly way, you bring back your attention to the present moment. Sometimes what they do in this practice, they use a word, like one word that is like the anchor. Mm-hmm. No, it can be anything. It can be Krishna, it can be love, it can be whatever helps you to bring you back to the moment of awareness, in the present moment, and openness. So we'll do that. We'll sit in silence. I will suggest that you sit in as straight as you can, because in silence, closing your eyes, it can be a journey of no return. I would like to turn on lights, but it may be too much, so I trust your presence. So before we start, a few things. Go, no problem. Be careful with this. So will that, again, we won't do that for 20 minutes. We'll do that for 7 minutes or something. Of course, you can continue replicating this if you want in your life and practice. So the idea is to remain present to God's disclosure, trying to let go of preconceived ideas about Krishna, about your spiritual path, about you. But we carry a bunch of that preconceptions, and that gets in the way of allowing all that we can be now, all that Krishna can be now, not what was a minute ago. So try to release all attempts to figure things out, right? And try to rest in the peace of unknowing, as we were talking yesterday, today. And even if you need pray to release any, familiar ideas about God. Not because they are bad, but somehow they are limiting what God can be now, in his, her ever-evolvingness. So we'll do that for a few minutes. And then before starting, we'll do for 7 minutes. And then for another 7 minutes, when we finish, I will invite you to journal individually. It won't be in groups. It will be each one. So I hope you have your paper and pen. So you can journal for 7 minutes about which was your experience of unknowing, which feelings arose in your attempt to let go of your need for certainty. How did it feel to pray to release familiar ideas about God? And how might a practice like this allow for a further understanding in your connection with the universe? Yeah, so we'll do for 7 minutes first part. After 7 minutes, I will let you know. I'll put some gentle sound here that will call you to return. And then we will journal for 7 more minutes. So we can start. Now you can sit, close your eyes. Maybe your breathing may help to enter into a state of introspection. And try to be present. So how was the exercise, the practice?
Yeah,
good.
Interesting.
Okay. Again, as we were mentioning, it can be a natural part of our life and practice with different practices. So, I mean, it's prayer. Again, we have to not limit silence to silence. It's just an aspect of prayer, an expression of prayer. Being in those situations can be a little confrontational in some level, in the sense of also seeing fears or not in control or the bombarding of thoughts and realizing, okay, I don't have too much control of this situation. That's why in the book also I mentioned prayer is not so much comfort zone, but confront zone, to make a play of words. And confrontation is not a bad word, although I know it's one of those words that may trigger. But it's just to bring in front of us those things that we need to see, we need to work on. And confrontation can be a form of intimacy, I'm being confronted with something, I'm invited to relate more closely to that, to dialogue with that, to talk with that. So as confronting as some as prayer may be, or sometimes as messy as it may be, because again, entering into prayer means also entering, we already talked about vulnerability, entering into brokenness and frailty and messiness. But all of this that may happen in prayer, for prayer to not be too scary for us to run away from it, has to be understood in the context of Krishna's unconditional love, which I think is also a very important aspect of prayer. No? We are entering into prayer, being very aware of what's the nature of the object of our prayer. No? And so I like to conclude today's presentation with some words about Krishna's unconditional love. Briefly, we already talked about that on day one, actually, from the day of vulnerability, because that's something to talk about from day one of any discussion. It's a great, very important foundation, as we were talking yesterday, you know, especially in the time we are living with many of us have self-hatred, as we say yesterday, self-loathing, so we need that healing on that tectonic shift, plagues, tectonic foundational level. Krishna loves you, unconditionally accept. He has accepted you infinitely already, even before you started to care, to pray, to care about him, to anything. He's already there. So, because if not, we talk too much about training in dying, confrontation. It's like, I don't want to do that. But all that is in the context of infinite unconditional love. So that's important to keep in mind. So we talked a little bit about that these days, about darshan, remember, being seen, allowing ourselves to be seen, presenting ourselves to God, again, prayer, but he's seeing us, they are seeing us, Radha and Krishna, with eyes melting with affection and love and acceptance, and we already belong. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is described as the best possible friend of all living entities, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. Not only of the devotees. No. Watch out for that. Be careful of becoming exclusivistic in the name of unconditional love. That's a contradiction of terms. No. Krishna loves unconditionally, but only his devotees. It's like, that doesn't sound unconditional. That's pretty conditional. Well, the condition being, you are my devotee, I love you. You are not my devotee, sorry. Good luck. That's not unconditional love. But Krishna is the unconditional friend, the Suhrit. Suhrit means someone with a very big heart, very good Suhrit. Hrit means heart. And Su means too much, a very good heart, lots of heart. I like just to mention, to go with you through a few names of Krishna that are mentioned in the Vishnu Sahasranam. There are many names of God in many traditions, including ours, as we know. Mahaprabhu will say, Nam Nam Akari Bahuda. God has endless names. And many of these names, not to say all, point to his unconditional love, to his mercy, to his affection. So some months ago, I was in Alachua at Pranada's house, and I saw Vishnu Sahasranam. This is a section of the It appears in the Mahabharata, but in other scriptures as well, the 1,000 names of God. And I never went through those. I knew about those. I knew some. Let's go one by one. And I was very surprised to find so many names speaking about Krishna's mercy and affection and unconditional love. So I'd like to share a few of those with you as a meditation. Also, try to understand each of these names. For us in our tradition, the names of God are God, unknown different. No. Mm-hmm. So if a name speaks about his love, it's because he is love, right? So just, I'll mention a few, of course. I won't go to the 1,000, no, relax. It's just like whatever, 14 or something. There are more, but I'm just picking a few that I think are very, Udipan, they can trigger a very beautiful reflection, no? And that will be tied to our last exercise for today, in connection to names of God, in connection to unconditional love. I'll mention the Sanskrit and then the translation, but do not over concern how you're writing. If you want to write, and if not, I can send them later, so no problem. So, for example, one name that appears there is Bhutabrid, which means he who takes care of all beings in the universe. Bhutabrid. So the divine is he who takes care of all beings in the universe. A similar name is Bhuta Bhavana. Now, Bhuta means all beings. Now, and Bhuta is a specific Sanskrit term that goes beyond human race. Now it's all beings, right? So Bhuta Bhavana means he who nurtures every being in the universe. Another way of saying the same thing. He who takes care, he who nourishes everyone unconditionally. Another name he has is Anukul. Anukul. Means he who is positively interested in everyone. He is positively, because some people may be interested in you, but who knows for which reasons. So positively, favorably interested in everyone, not in a few. No, we generally are interested only in a few, and our intentions may be a little weird. He has positive regard and unconditional interest for everyone in a loving way. Anukul. Then we have this name, Suhrit. Suhrit appears so many times in the Bhagavad and the Bhagavad Gita, over and over again, apart from in this list. Who means he who has a great heart. Again, Hrit means heart, and Su means very great or very good. He has a very good, very great heart. But generally it's translated as a well-wishing friend of everyone. Krishna says in the Gita, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. I'm the well-wishing friend of every living entity. Another name is Batsi. Batsi means he who is affectionate. Connects somehow to Batsalya, which speaks about this motherly, fatherly love. No? So Batsi is like from that, like a mother, like a loving mother, like a loving father, like a loving cow nourishing the calf. No? Another one is Nivritti Tatma. Nivritti Tatma, which means he who is available everywhere. No, you can always call him. No, you will never find like answering machine. Well, at this precise moment, I'm dealing with 3,000 million other prayers. I'm too busy for you. Sorry. Call again. Hopefully, you have some good luck at some point because I'm quite busy here. He who is available, always available, everywhere. No, at every time and every place, available. Like inviting for relation, dialogue. Another nice name is Sunda. Not Sundar, Sunda. Sunda means wet. So the idea is he who is always wet, like dripping with mercy and compassion. That's implication. He's always wet with love. And he's exuding unconditional affection. That's one name of the divine. And all this speaks about that same person we are addressing in prayer, Sunda. Another name is Parjanya. Parjanya, you may know, this is the name of also Nanda Maharaj's father, Parjanya Maharaj. Parjanya means cloud. So he's like a cloud. The cloud that is, cloud showers copious rain to all. It's not like exclusivistic. I will just throw a drop there and a drop to him, but not to that person. But it's just like unconditional in its showering of grace in this case. So Krishna is like a cloud. I mean, he's a dark cloud, literally. Ghanashyam, Parjanya. And one last name. Again, we can go on, and it's beautiful. It's a beautiful meditation. Another name is Sarvatomukha. Sarvatomukha, which means, literally means he whose face is everywhere, but basically means he who can be approached from everywhere. So no matter how fallen you are, how fallen you think you are, which life circumstance you are, he can be approached from anywhere, from any life situation. He's always available. He's always willing. So these are a few of the highlights from the 1,000. Just an appetizer, a 14-13 appetizer of the 1,000. And of course, we have so many other names that are maybe more familiar for us, like Karuna Sindhu, goddess, ocean of grace. Mahaprabhu, sometimes known Mahavadanya, is the most magnanimous, greatly Kripamoy, he who is made of mercy. But the point always is like we have to, how to say, relate to the meaning and the implication of the name, because sometimes it becomes just a word and we lose sight of what the word is talking about and how those things are non-different from the person. So sometimes if it helps, that's fine. If it helps you to connect more deeply to what the name is talking about. So for me, it's very important, again, go in the topic of prayer we are talking about, that to keep in mind this very affectionately wet nature of God in terms of unconditional love, because that that sets, that puts in context our own approach to Krishna. Instead of approaching him, I want this, I need that, I'm afraid if I don't approach you, what will happen of the consequences? I pray to you so you love me. Put all that aside for a moment and just bear in mind, he already loves you infinitely. He accepted you unconditionally in every pore of your being. And now approach him from that place. Now, having that in place, having established clearly how loved you are already by the sweet absolute, pray as a response to that. Follow my point? Not pray because he doesn't love you yet. Don't serve because you are not yet loved by him. So in that sense, the motivation for our bhakti practice can shift considerably. Instead of practicing out of fear, out of guilt, out of duty, out of social pressure, out of who knows what, I'm practicing out of gratitude, out of celebration, out of a willingness to reciprocate all that I'm already receiving. So prayer in that sense has a lot to do with this. Prayer has to do with remaining aware that we are already loved unconditionally. One of the main experiences of prayer is I'm loved unconditionally. I'm the beloved of Krishna. Now I have to become the lover. You are already the beloved. The beloved is already there. The lover is the missing part of the equation. So these are the two aspects of our identity, beloved and lover, beloved, lover. We are already beloved, and that belovedness that we are receiving is what creates the healthy foundation to become the lover, to reciprocate in kind. So that's basically prayer. Prayer, in one sense, is our attempt to reciprocate, to respond to Krishna's initial invitation. If we are praying, again, if I start to pray, it's not that I'm taking the initiative. He already took the initiative, and that's why I'm praying. Right? It's not that, okay, now I'm praying, and hopefully Krishna finally speaks to me for the first time. No. Because that has been going on for so long, without beginning, technically, is that now I'm awakening to the fact of and the need of prayer. So prayer could be defined so many ways, and one in connection to what we are talking, just to conclude. Prayer means remaining present to the miracle of God's unconditional love. Entering into a sacred space of presence to that fact. You are already loved. You're fully accepted. And from that acceptance, to listen, to be present and listen attentively to what's revealed by that loving personality, and then reciprocating to whatever we are further receiving, reciprocating as lovingly as we can, not only during prayer, again, but during every moment, because every moment is prayer in potential, again, every moment, every work, like the quote of Thomas Merton with which I begin the chapter of prayer, and I conclude with that, with how I begin the chapter. By Thomas Merton, who is a very I mean, we are talking about contemplative prayer. Here you have someone who is living that from 24/7. He said the true contemplative is one who has discovered the art of finding leisure, even in the midst of his work, by working with such a spirit of detachment and recollection that even his work is a prayer. Mm-hmm. He will speak so much and write so much about that. No, prayer is work, the highest work, but work is prayer. No, I'm trying to interwoven this dance. So, a few thoughts on contemplative prayer. So much can be said. And before we go to the closing exercise for later, not for now, for some moment during the day. Any questions? Today, later, we'll have circle work, not Q&A, but tomorrow we can also, of course, address questions on today's topic, but maybe there is something pressing, urgent. Yes, initially.
It's contemplative prayer. It seems that we haven't really associated that with Bandhanam so much.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't really been presented.
Agree.
Yeah,
agree. Yeah. Many times we relate Bandhanam more with reciting prayers, probably. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily even yours, but someone else's. Because, of course, you don't know how to pray.
Yes.
If you compose a prayer, that will be so speculative, right? Yeah. So imperfect. Because who you are to write a prayer? Who do you think you are? Narottam Das Thakur? I have to play a little bit the devil's advocate.
I feel like you were channeling me.
I did sound a bit like you.
So yeah, I think it's important to open, again, to play out the implications of these terms and translate them, explain them as broad as possible without watering down anything. No, actually, on the contrary, we're not watering down. It's the opposite of that. And once it's easier to just read something, blah, 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 I'm doing Bandhanam, then pray. Compose your prayer or do not speak and pray. Be a prayer, become prayer. No, I better read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayers. I mean, I have nothing against that. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's not the whole meaning of Bandhanam. And again, what you were doing a few minutes ago, just sitting in silence, being present to the miracles of Krishna's unconditional love, that's Bandhanam. No? That's silence, but that's Bandhanam, as Prabhupada was saying, as we read before, the importance of silence. So, yeah. Sorry, Penny, you were saying something.
Not knowing a lot of official prayers, I tend to just speak on my to Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds like normal. Sounds like good. Sounds like necessary.
This is what this one's trying to learn.
Oh. Yeah. You came to teach us. Thank you so much. So,
I find sometimes if I'm writing the prayer down, then it almost doesn't lose its value, but I can feel like Paramatma kind of saying, that's great, but now there's something new to you know, as you're writing, it's like prayer. I was like, oh, everything's changed now. You know? But now that prayer doesn't quite speak.
Mm.
So I find it like Penny, like spontaneous prayer, where there's no formal.
On that particular moment.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Tomorrow, later today, that will be something else. The whole thing have became upgraded already, as we were talking. So yeah, that keeps the prayer world, inner world, and practice constantly new. It's not just, I mean, I'm not against reciting once the same prayers. We're talking with some of us these days about like the way of the pilgrim, famous Christian book, and he will recite the Jesus prayer, which is quote unquote always the same, but it's never the same. No? Similar to us reciting Maha Mantra. One sense, it's like, I remember once we were recording an album of Kirtan in Argentina with devotees, but a friend from other community came to play tabla. And the whole album was Maha Mantra. Not the whole album, but mostly. And he was at the end joking, like, he was like, we're talking about editing some parts of the album. Say, you have to edit one part. Which part? That which says Hare Krishna. Like, play which one of the 3,000 of those? Yeah. So I'm not, that's an important aspect of keeping, understanding how even beyond the same words that we may repeat on a daily basis, when we do that, there has to be an ever-evolving dynamic spirit. As we were saying the other day, Hare Krishna is Radha and Krishna, Radha and Krishna are constantly becoming new. Yeah. So the holy name is constantly becoming new. If we lose sight of that, we may end up repeating, doing the same thing forever, and that sounds like dangerous. It can be a recipe for numbing.
Mm-hmm.
If you repeat the same word over and over again without understanding that it's not the same, mm-hmm. without an ever-evolving spirit, it numbs. It instead of bringing Krishna consciousness, it brings unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It numbs. It's catatonic. It's mechanical. It takes you more and more to a robot-like side. And I've seen practitioners go in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not blaming anyone. I'm just saying that may be the result of just doing the same thing over and over again without a dynamic inner spirit that makes you cyber-like or something. So, yeah, just a mention in connection to when we say the same thing externally, although I think it's a good compliment to have that moments of a spontaneous prayer and composition or whatever comes.
Yeah. I suppose saying the same prayer can still take on that spontaneous.
Yeah. That's the idea. Isn't it, right? Yeah. So that's the only way that same prayer will work, because if not, yeah. Yeah. Something else? Jivan.
Oh, you carry on.
No, Jivan first.
Okay, yeah, okay.
Let's put Yogamaya to test for a minute. My last chastisement of the retreat.
I've always found it hard how life can be a prayer, 24 hours a day. Sometimes when we're working, we're in different situations,
mm-hmm.
and we're not thinking of Krishna, we're thinking of that situation. So how can, and some, you know, there's that old cliche that it's okay for you, Maharaj, you're in Krishna consciousness all day, but for us who work in the world.
Not even for me. And you're making that divide. You're starting to make the divide. We are working in the world, and Maya and the material world. And, well, we have to be trained in a way that we still see Krishna there. And Krishna is everywhere. There's not a place. We have to pay attention how much we have created that thick dividing line of, okay, I'm not a monk, I'm a grihasta, therefore it means I'm, so to say, fallen from grace, and I have to deal with illusion, and therefore Krishna is not there, Krishna is inside the temple where all the orange guys live. I'm not saying you think like that, but I'm just like exaggerating that a little bit. But Krishna is everywhere, at work, in the street, in the most ordinary moments. So in potential, everything can be prayer. As I said in the class, I'm not saying, okay, guys, after this meeting, pray 24/7, please. No, I want you there. That's kind of the goal to attain.
Mm-hmm.
No, so again, we have to be careful not to mistake the goal to attain with what I should be experiencing now, because I get discouraged immediately. It's like, it's not working. Well, I'm not there. That's why I say we have to begin somewhere. And the somewhere, maybe you may need to set a fixed time of your day to just do nothing but pray.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do that nicely, deeply, naturally, that will start to extend to other moments of your day when you apparently are doing something else. And then you realize, I'm doing something else, but I'm actually praying also. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's a very gradual process, no? And it extends one more minute per day, two more minutes, 3, 1 hour. Someday will be 24/7. Oh, that's a nice for a picture. That's a nice moment. Okay, there he is. Charlie, there. Thank you. You're taking a picture of the dog for those who are looking online. So something like that, no? It's a gradual process, and it may begin with something, some moments, fixed moments that we try to organize our lives around. Okay, I will save those precious moments, ideally before my day begins, maybe before my day ends, to bring, not to set those, and gradually, hopefully, all that happens in between starts to become influenced by that. Gradually. Yoga Maya. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Now, now, a little bit now and a little bit later.
I was just going to say, sometimes prayer can be just a feeling and not necessarily words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And Krishna picks up that energy, picks up that, and our prayer, you know, that's what came to me this morning, actually, was because I started to write you, and Krishna said, no, I.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it was like, yeah, it's very powerful.
Mm, nice, thank you. And again, you say it's a feeling, and yeah, and you can be, and that's an offering to Krishna. No? Again, yeah.
Sometimes words just don't do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sometimes words sounds limiting, suffocating, and it's,
yeah.
And that's what I was also mentioning before with this book, the practice of the presence of this monk that will just, for a moment, feel something and just offer that feeling. No? Yeah. It's very intimate secret. Nobody externally, you seem to be passing the broom or anything, but internally you are offering that moment of feeling without any words. And don't you think Krishna is taking note of that? Yeah. I mean, he's like, okay. So, yeah. I think it's important that we, deconstruct these usual ideas we have about it should happen like this, it only can happen like this, is prayer. It can take so many forms. Shuddha Devi Radhika.
Yeah, so last night Radha Priya was saying this, that you know, it's a personal relationship with Krishna,
mm-hmm.
like and all the other relationships we have.
Yep.
You know, it's unique, and with everybody it's different.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, so yeah, at all times we're interacting and all that, and that in itself can be prayer if we are remembering. It's a personal relationship like that.
With yeah, Krishna. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what we're saying, because Krishna is in everything and in everyone. So if I relate to you, and I'm aware also of Krishna's presence in your life, in your heart, my dialogue with you, my relationship with you, is an extension of my prayer life. So it's beautiful. Many times it helps to have this language and these waves of expressing, so we can think about these things in that way, in a broader way, so we get accustomed to think of prayer in an all-embracing way. It can be my relationships, it can be a feeling, it can be my brooming, sweeping. And so on, no? So whenever when you have that language, sometimes we need language and concepts to facilitate the experience, no? If we have just words and concepts that are more like short-sighted, our experience reaches so far. You know? So when we have a broader conception, it's like, okay, my experience can get farther than that.
Mm.
Okay, so that's it. Let's conclude with, if there are more questions, we continue these days. But let me share one more exercise to do later today.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you can, whenever it's possible before the evening meeting. But so this will be more connected to the second part of the meeting, where we were talking about Krishna's unconditional love and different names that represent that. Mm-hmm. So the idea will be, the objective of the exercise, before going to the exercise, is basically to deepen our personal connection with Krishna, Radha and Krishna, by selecting certain names that resonate with you and composing your own prayer again, like fostering intimacy and healthy comfort in your connection. So the idea will be, first will be a more individual part, and then we'll go to the group part. So maybe you can select three names that resonate with you of God. It can be some of the ones we shared today or some others. There's no hard and fast rule for that selection. It can be in Sanskrit, it can be in English, it can be in Spanish, no problem. So select three, some.
No hard and fast rules.
Yeah, so you pick three names that resonate with you in connection to God's unconditional love and affection. So reflect about why those three names. What do they mean for you? to contemplate the meaning. Now take a few minutes after selecting those three, take a few moments to again reflect why this name, what's the meaning of this name, what they mean to me, and how these names express the qualities of the divine, no? Whether love, nurturing, compassion, protection.
We don't do that now.
So you reflect on that and how all that speaks to you, how does those qualities that those names describe connect to your life in this particular moment? No, make it personal. That's my point. Make it personal, radically personal. And let that those reflections and feelings again fill you with gratitude, no, with wonder, with the blessings. So that's the first part. And then comes the writing your prayer. So using the names you have chosen, write a personal prayer that feels natural, that feels intimate. So it's a prayer that can, there again, no hard and fast rule. It can express gratitude. It can beg for guidance. It can be simply an offering of love and devotion. The focus is create a prayer that feels comfortable to you, feels natural, feels aligned with your relationship with the sweet absolute. So all that, of course, is by yourself. And then comes the group part, which will be basically, as you can imagine, basically sharing your experience of that process you've gone by yourself, sharing that in a group, which, of course, that allows for a collective experience of connecting with God and like fostering a community group around prayer also. No? Like that's also important. Prayer is something very personal, but also it's nice to have
inspirational.
Yeah, a community of prayers, those who pray, no? And supporting each other with their own experience in prayer. So yeah, basically that, reflecting together how much this type of practice or exercise brought us closer to Krishna, to my relationship, helps us to grasp more realistically who he is, who am I, what's our relationship. And if it helped at all, which I assume it will, you can conclude thinking how maybe I can incorporate that as part of my practice. Maybe it helps me to just spend some moments a day meditating on my favorite names of God, and I mean, why not? Again, we give yourself permission to be creative in bhakti. There are certain parameters, but we are not proposing anything absolutely out of, really. All right, so be creative. No, oh, if it helps me, why you don't continue doing it? That's for me. Like the other day, we were like, oh, the eye gazing was so nice. Why you don't continue doing it? Don't wait for me to tell you, okay, next second you do it again. Okay, I'll do it again because Mara said. The question is why you don't continue to do it again. So feel free, give yourself permission to do those things that you feel they are nourishing you. And it's being creative in bhakti. So that's the exercise. It's clear?
Yeah.
Okay, so you can do it whenever you have time, later today. Now in a minute, we'll select the groups for the sharing. We'll conclude here, and tomorrow later we have the sharing circle in the evening, and tomorrow in the morning we'll have our last seventh pillar, where we'll be talking about the last chapter of radical personalism, which is unearthing heaven, which is basically like reclaiming and redeeming our relationship with matter, with the material world, which is connected. We're talking about contemplative prayer, contemplative vision. And contemplative vision takes us to see the wholeness in everything, the connection with the divine in everything. And probably the place we need to start is our most immediate reality for many of us, which is matter, and how to make peace with it. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. We'll put the discussion to rest now. Sri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanand Hari Gaur, Vancha Kalpa Taru Vishcha, Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha, Patita Nampa Vanepya Vaishnava, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai.